Welcome to the Mystery Alive podcast, brought to you by Mind Over Mystery. Each week, our experts, Lars and David, and their guests will bring you intriguing perspectives on real cases and real scenarios. This informal discussion by the Mystery Masters comes from the living room, not the classroom or the boardroom. They chat candidly and tell you how they really feel about some of the most challenging cases ever to stump lovers of mystery.
Well, in terms of what case we're going to talk about today, I got to tell you, I think the most interesting case we've ever looked at is the case of a guy. He's so hated by so many people that after he's been off the street for 20 years, he's been in prison. Then they transfer him to another prison, lower security level, where prisoners can finally get at him. And he gets beaten to death in prison. He's been out of the game 20 years. Oh, by the way, he's now 89 years old. Wow. If you can believe that.
That's crazy. Well, I got one. My favorite murder case. There's a couple of guys so cold-blooded, they could murder their own girlfriends or even like a stepdaughter just because they think they might know too much. Not only did they murder them, then they strangle them, then they pull their teeth out and cut their fingers off so that their bodies couldn't be identified.
Yeah, that blew my mind. Cold-bloodedness, I've seen lizards with warmer blood than that. I love that case. But really, though, I got to think the most mind-boggling case that we've ever seen is the case of a guy who's so hardened a criminal, they send him to Alcatraz, the Rock. We've all heard of that. And then they experiment on this guy with LSD. As if these psyches of these guys are not already screwed up enough?
Oh, yeah, whose idea was that?
Whose thought was that?
Well, you know, I like that. I know what you're talking about. I like that one, too. But what about this one criminal? He was so amazing. He was so smart that he cons the FBI in that region for years and years and years to provide him cover for all of his activities. And in essence, he brought the FBI into his organization to help him do his work. What about that guy?
Yeah, I remember. I mean, he got them so compromised, he gave them money. Basically, he had his hand up in them. They're the puppet, and with his fingers.
Absolutely.
He's the puppeteer. That was amazing. But no, I got to tell you one last favorite, a case we'll also talk about. This guy, he lived a completely selfish life. He's stealing with reckless abandon. Most people would call him a psychopath. But he's got a brother with a law degree who rises to the top of politics in his state. The brother just a few years age difference. And you think, wow, what different paths, what different brothers. And then you look at all the stuff his brother pulled over the years, you say, is this really one guy who just happened to take two different paths with the same sociopathic psyche? I mean, that's a mind-boggler too in its own way.
Well, it is. But tell me the real mind-boggler.
Well, people might have caught on. We've talked about five different cases, it sounds like, but would you believe this is all one and the same? The case of Whitey Bulger and his brother, Billy Bulger. One case has this, and it's got a whole lot more going for it.
That sounds cool. We're going to talk about that today?
I think so. I mean, the Bulger case in Boston, it's remembered to this day. His height of his criminal career was many years ago, but they will tell you, James Whitey Bulger by nickname and Billy Bulger, they will tell you stories about those guys for years into the future. They will not soon be forgotten.
So, well, why don't you give me like a little timeline of what we're talking about?
I mean, Whitey, the thug, the star of our show, you know, when he was young, like a lot of thugs, he was not very subtle, just brutal. He hijacked trucks, he robbed banks, and that catches up with you. And so the feds get him and they slap him along. Prison sentence, and they send him to the Rock, to Alcatraz, and which happens to be a college of criminality, at least in his case. He spent his time wisely studying, when I get out of here, how do I do this smarta, as they say in Boston?
All you've been kind of doing is low-level stuff, hijacking trucks like that, and then they send you to Alcatraz? That's like graduate school for the criminally insane.
Yeah, it was the harbinger of things to come with this guy, and I tell you, of course, there's the LSD experiments under the MK Ultra program.
That's insane.
Guys' psyches are already screwed in sociopathic directions, and you experiment with them with a drug like that on these guys. How is that supposed to come out? And then, so finally, he's released from prison in 1965 to start his mature, bright career,
Because in prison, didn't he, like, he read books on leadership. He read strategy for military people. He read all kinds of stuff like that. So he basically just got smarter and smarter.
He vowed to be a smarter criminal and not go back to prison. I thought it was interesting in the timeline when he was released from prison in 1965, he would not be arrested again for another 46 years. And this wasn't a guy who was just nibbling around the edges of crime, you know, just occasionally got caught up with a group and they did a little
Wait, how this long?
46 years of being the baddest badass in Boston, essentially. And they don't touch him. They don't arrest him for 46 years.
I mean, he was running South Boston by the 70s and 80s. And part of that rise, he was in effect in partnership with the FBI starting in the early 70s.
The FBI, in an attempt to catch other bad guys, they used this, what do they call them? Well, we're the good bad guys?
Yeah. And they called it, you know, in fairness, they've got a program, they've got a justification. You get upper echelon informants, supposedly, people who are high enough up in the organized crime system. They can give you real information. That's the idea. And you got to let them slide on some things. Supposedly, they're going to help you, in this case, bring down the Italian mob. But how much did he really know about the Italian mob, La Cosa Nostra? He gave them tidbits and breadcrumbs, and they gave him free rein to be a terrorist in Boston for, you know, decades.
He's doing kind of the same thing that the Italians are doing, except the Italians are kind of keeping it in the business. If you just crossed Whitey, I mean, he shot like the wrong people sometime.
He did. I mean, mostly he was very focused on business and the bottom line, but there was apparently a mean streak. One of his guys said about him, well, you could tell he was getting jittery, and then he got an excuse to kill somebody, and he seemed so relaxed after that for
yeah,
the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, 2 or 3 weeks, it was like a sedative.
Don't we all find that therapeutic? Pull someone's teeth from their skull and bury the body deep underground, and it's, you know, soothing for the best of us,
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
Absolutely.
I don't mean to make light of this, but the story, this is a story that you almost can't talk about without going, you know, there's so much wow factor here. This is a hard,
oh,
hard
this,
to believe.
This really is.
Stuff
it's
is hard
crazy.
To believe. And, you know, so other agencies were not compromised the way the FBI was. The Boston State Police apparently did not get corrupted by this guy. And so as other law enforcement levels closed in on Bulger after this decades-long run of really running criminal affairs in South Boston, making a boatload of money, he's getting closed in on. There's going to be indictments coming down in 1994. And Connolly, his FBI handler, does him one last favor. Whitey, you better skip town. And he does.
Well, it probably doesn't hurt that he's got a brother that's in the state Senate.
Yeah, and there's debate about that, whether those two worlds, Connolly later talking about this and others said, no, those two worlds never really intersected. You know, Billy Bulger, the big politician, he's a good guy. I call him my friend. Let's just say if you look into his background, it almost looks like he took a different path, but with the same hard-nosed mentality. Oh. It's hard to tell how different those guys were.
Right.
But getting a law degree and doing it legally avoids a lot of trouble for you later. Yeah, the indictments were nasty coming down in 94, and Whitey disappears for, you know, below the radar 16 years. How did he do that? He was such a downrange thinker. He's out there for several years before the indictments came down. He's out there traveling around, establishing aliases, salting his money away in
right.
bank deposit boxes all around. He's the guy who's saying, one day I got to function out here just below the radar, but I'm not going to do it broke. I'm going to have plenty of money stashed away.
Well, fun thing is, if you read the books or you watch the videos or the documentaries, you see that they say, well, the FBI, they planted a bug in his car, but he was two steps ahead of them, you know, and then they say, and then finally they went to the warehouse where they were, but Whitey was two steps ahead of them. And it was crazy because he's always ahead of anybody that's trying to take him down. So not only is he ruthless, he's smart, and he's got this, he's got informants that's like, you know, they just probably call him up and go, the fat man walks alone, you know, some crazy, you know,
code
word. And then he just, you know, oh, how cool is that?
Yeah, and they're looking for him. There's debate about how serious the FBI attempt to find him was, because this is an embarrassment. Do we really want to find this guy? But I think they had him second on the FBI's most wanted list for years, right behind, are you ready, Osama bin Laden.
Whoa.
He's the first runner-up. I think there was an honest attempt to process those tips. They got hundreds of tips over the year. We think we've seen Whitey Bulger here or there. Eyewitness stuff like that's usually pretty unreliable. But somebody, noting that his partner, Catherine Gregg, loves animals, She remembered a lady feeding a stray animal, and she remembered the unusual facial structure of Catherine Gregg.
I think that's a really good point, because Catherine was very distinctive looking, whereas Whitey Bulger, I've seen pictures. They go, we think he might have been in Rome. They got a picture of just some guy with a hat on. Then he might have been spotted in Paris. And he was so just vanilla looking, you know.
Right. Once he was an old bald guy, he looked like literally millions of others. But yeah, they found him through his girlfriend, and he's in the States, in Southern California. They come knocking on his door one day. Actually, they caught him in a storage area in the basement. You Whitey Bulger? And they get him, and one of the guys asks him after it's clear, the run is over, he's under arrest, aren't you sort of relieved after all this time? And they say his string of four-letter expletives was priceless. No, he's not relieved when he's living a life with still hundreds of thousands of dollars hidden in the wall to be going to prison. Are you out of your minds?
What age would he have been when they finally caught him?
He would have been about 80. He would have been getting to be 80 already.
Maybe he was mad because he was kind of living a mundane life at that time.
He was just trying to live the relaxed retiree lifestyle. Why he did it in the States, where people
that's
was,
amazing.
Yeah. Why not go to some other country full of expats where you can blend into the crowd, but your picture's not going to be circulating all over? That was part of the mix. And so then they have to take this to court, the federal court system. The federal courthouse in Boston was the scene of some drama between, I think it was about 2011 and 2013. You know, if you're the prosecutor and you've got to deal with this, you can't sweep it under the rug anymore. So they went after Whitey. They also made sure that they really put John Connally away. He had actually been prosecuted a few years before as accessory to murder. The FBI took care of Whitey and certainly put him away for the rest of his life. But they also took down, you know, a couple of guys who had a lot of negative things to say about the FBI. And whether that's coincidence that the two most outspoken whistleblowers went down, or whether it's not coincidence,
I don't believe,
got to think through all that.
Yeah,
that's
too much in coincidences.
That's part of our criminal justice mystery here. So that's the basic timeline on Whitey. Early career as just a thug, but after he got smart about it, he was running crime in South Boston for decades as ruthlessly as any criminal who's ever lived. And yet he was doing it in almost a partnership with the FBI, which has been a huge embarrassment for the agency in that neck of the woods forever.
They still talk about it.
They sure do.
Well, it was amazing that one of the people we're talking about, they found out he was dead. They said there were people cheering in the streets in Boston. And how long had he been off the radar?
20-some years.
What an amazing mystery this is.
What a run.
Whitey is interesting because, you know, he actually tricked the FBI into helping him. And it just kind of blows people's minds. Like, wait a minute, the FBI helped this awful, awful person? And then you know, I love what you said. You're like, well, can you imagine being so hated that you haven't been around for 20 years and the first time somebody gets a chance, they beat you to death?
At age 89.
And yeah, by the way, he's 89.
Yeah, I mean, the Bulger case, and you could call it the Bulger and Bulger case because his brother was the most powerful and corrupt politician in Massachusetts in many ways.
Well, he was the president of the
Senate,
yeah.
Massachusetts State Senate. And then got himself bumped up finally in his semi-retirement years to president of the University of Massachusetts system. A guy with no background in, you know, formal academics of that sort. He'd gotten a law degree and gone into politics. But, I mean, it's the most multi-layered thing. Folks in that region, in the Boston region, who've been around the last 30, 40 years, they're all very aware of the Bulger case. I've got a cousin who's lived there for decades. Don't get her started. She'll tell you all about the Bulger stories because they, you know, they exist by the dozens. But, you know, people say, well, what's the mystery dimension of this, the whole thing? And there's bunches of stuff we don't yet know that's kind of in the realm of mystery, too, in the conspiracy and the corruption realm.
Right, because that was the first thing I thought of when you were telling me about we were going to do Whitey. I'm like, what is the mystery, or what do you think is one of the most intriguing parts?
What did the FBI know about what he was doing, and when did they know it, is the question that echoes in my mind more than any question about the Bulger thing. They say, the FBI says, well, we had, you know, he was a high level, what they call a high echelon informant, and we needed his help. We told him he could do some light action, run some numbers, do some gambling on the side.
Just don't kill anybody,
nothing violent. But you'll be okay while you feed us information on the Italian mob, which are a real target.
Sure.
La Cosa Nostra. one thing that makes it so fascinating to try to figure out where heads, people's heads were at, where organizations, where they were coming from. J. Edgar Hoover, for years, had ignored, had denied the fact that there was organized crime.
There was no mafia. There was no organized crime at all.
When it finally hit him in the face like a lemon meringue pie, that's another whole story we could tell you sometime.
Sure.
Hoover then, being Mr. Original PR Man for Hoover, switched gears and for the rest of his life until he died of a heart attack in 72, he was Mr. I'm going to bring down organized crime. I'm going to get the mafia.
Yes.
And so he privileged that. He took that at a very high level. And if any of his agents out in the field were developing contacts that could help him bring down the mafia, they were golden. So the official FBI story was, well, so we had a legitimate upper echelon informant. That was a precious thing for us. We had one agent, John Connolly, who became a bit corrupted, went a little too far with this relationship.
Also remember, they lived in the same housing project, Whitey Bulger and he. And Whitey actually saved him from getting beat up when he was a kid. So he admired, he just really lauded this, you know, Whitey Bulger.
And Connolly, the guy who took the fall, says, wait a minute, I'm not that guy who should be going down here. My boss Morris, for example, was accepting payoffs. He was the corrupt guy. He was the guy who was enabling all of this.
And using his position as a stepping stone, because he later went on to become some big high guy in Los Angeles.
Yeah, he was able to escape. He got immunity. He was able to escape the worst of this. So that's another part of the mystery. Behind the closed doors in the Department of Justice, when Whitey Bulger goes missing 16 years, he's finally caught. This has to go into court. There has to be a high-profile trial in the federal courtroom in Boston. What do you cover up, and what do you put out there honestly? That's really the question that makes this fascinating to me. If it weren't for people flipping who ratted on the rat, Whitey Bulger, he'd be walking around today saying, I'm a legit businessman. Sure, I've been a little hard-nosed in the way I run my bars and my laundromats, but no, I've never been anything that I should go to jail for.
He would slap people around. He'd muscle people around to say, you, that's code number one. You don't rat on anyone. Meanwhile, he's ratting on everybody.
He is, and he's finding out information from the FBI as they're ratting out informants.
Right.
So he's playing all sides against the middle.
Yeah.
In order to stay in power. He was shrewd, extremely shrewd, and extremely worthless. Ruthless. Did I say worthless? Both of the above apply.
Freudian slip there.
And those two things, being ruthless and being shrewd at being ruthless, will take you a long way, apparently, in organized crime. But remember, the next time you're interviewing someone for CEO of an organized crime organization, that's what you want.
I'll have to remember that.
Yeah, keep that
in mind.
Well,
I like what you said, because they put him in Alcatraz.
And now this was, just so people are clear, this was the early Bulger criminal career. He was robbing banks. He wasn't yet the shrewd
guy.
He's
like 21 years old, something like that.
As a young guy, he did the traditional stuff, and you get the traditional punishment. They finally nab you for a bank robbery. They send you, they say, this is a hardened guy. They send you to the Rock, to Alcatraz.
Yeah.
And when he got out, his later career was much more shrewd.
Yeah, it's like we kind of helped him shape who he wanted to be, because he actually said, when I got in there, I started thinking about the mistakes I'd made. I started getting my act together. That was what he thought was getting his act together.
And the folks experimenting with twisting your mind around with LSD in those days.
Oh,
where did they say we can get some guinea pigs? The federal prison system.
That blows my mind. That you would take a guy with that mentality and put him in an LSD experiment. I mean, oh my God, this guy's mind is so messed up. And they say after that he had nightmares. He was angry. He was angry at the establishment that did this to him. Well, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, that's pretty justified.
What could possibly go wrong by administering mind-bending drugs to these people? And you know they're getting out one day.
Professor, I've got this great idea. What do you think of it? Well, that sounds wonderful.
I'm going to make murderous killers even stranger in their psychological makeup. Isn't that a fine idea? That's how it looks, at least at this vantage point, looking back in history. What were they thinking? You know, and we don't know how that played into into Bulger's later psychopathic murderous career, but it can't have helped.
It can't have helped, especially if you're going to kind of disassociate yourself with something.
I don't know what to make out of all this except to say we'll follow up on this case because there, and we'll try to get some of the people who were there in Boston at the time to visit in with us in the next time we visit this case.
That's a very interesting case with so many directions you can go.
It would be depressing if it weren't so fascinating. Or it would be fascinating if it weren't so depressing. It's all of the above.
I think that's all the above right there.
So thanks, Lars. We'll talk about this again soon.
Well, thanks, David.